Basketball.
All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, November 3rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis. New theme song, y'all. How do you like it?
Sometimes James just likes to do this stuff in the background, and sometimes we just like to hit record and see what happens. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site, DFSR.com for short / NBA. Okay, stop doing that now. Stop doing it. Please stop. Thank you. DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you started with a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. You're all set to go. We got a huge slate in basketball tonight for Friday. I think 14 games, something like that. 12, 13, 14. Who can count? I can't count. I'm too excited to talk about basketball. Can't be bothered just counting on how many games are going. No human being can count how many games are actually being played here. So it's better just to get started. We're going to go through these game by game breakdown, talk about some of the injury things that we're looking into, talk about some of the guys that we're going to consider for at least for cash games and possibly some tournaments tonight. A lot of stuff to get into, so we could might as well just go right there. First game, 7 o'clock, it's Cleveland and Washington. The Cavs are a complete mess. Washington is -3.5. LeBron is complaining and saying, I don't know what he wants to complain about because he, you know, okayed a lot of these deals. Like, he was the guy that wanted to bring in guys like Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade, and probably, you know, he's not the GM, but I'm sure he's
an influencer. I haven't been irritated with LeBron in a really long time, and I'm a little irritated with LeBron right now because the team construction is horrible. He very obviously had a say in some of it. He's playing, like, fine, up and down, sort of. I mean, he's great, obviously, one of the best players ever, if not the best, and I'm just annoyed with the whole situation. Like, I like playing LeBron. I like rooting for LeBron, and it's very hard to do that right now.
Yeah, he's been able to get there, you know, a couple times in this price so far this season. He was able to get there against Indiana. They have to continue to play him huge minutes if they want to stay in games. And this is not a team that's constructed to blow teams out. Now, again, it's not going to matter tonight because they're underdogs, and it's hard to imagine them blowing out the Wiz. Do you think at 10-6 from LeBron here at small forward, points per dollar multiplier, at least on FanDuel, is not that bad? Can you see playing him tonight?
Yeah, I think so. Otto Porter, his decision to play or not actually will influence this for me. Like, Porter's a guy that can switch on to LeBron. If he's not in the game, that the defensive, you know, kind of foothold for Washington really takes a hit for me. Going down to Jason Smith or, you know, just whoever else would slot into that role is a significant downgrade. So, yeah, keeping an eye on this one. But, yeah, I think either way, if the game's rates to be close, then you can always consider LeBron at a 10-6 price tag, especially because I don't know what you've seen in Rose so far, but it seems a lot more like Rose is just basically a shooting guard that can't shoot rather than a point guard in any real sense.
He sucks. It was the worst signing ever. I don't know why they did it. I said it right when they signed him. It made no sense. I'm going to say this. It seems like I'm contractually obligated.
What did your father-in-law say when you saw that signing and you were like, this signing makes no sense? Or like you were at the grocery store.
It's just a complete joke. Anyway, I think you can consider Kevin Love here. They have been bumping his minutes as well. He's probably going to create something of a matchup issue with them, though. It's not a great price on him. He's 8,100 on FanDuel. It's getting close. He really needs to play in the mid-30s minutes. This is actually, but like I said, this is a team against Washington that they can keep him on the court for a while. He's not such a huge defensive liability against Washington like he would be against some other teams. Washington is going to get Markieff Morris back tonight. He's back off his suspension, well, the injury plus the suspension. So he's going to play tonight, though. They're going to limit him to something like 15 minutes. I took guys like Oubre and Jason Smith and kind of just took them off the board because I think Morris coming back will... He will eventually gobble up most of the power forward minutes, or at least high 20s power forward minutes. Other than that, Washington side of the ball, I mean, John Wall against Derrick Rose. Again, Derrick Rose can't play any defense either. They can't play defense. They can't shoot. I don't know. I just don't know what he can do. But do you like Wall? Wall's pushing up to 10,000 here, but you can see him playing a lot of minutes tonight.
I could see him playing a lot of minutes tonight. I think I kind of like but don't love Wall. We really haven't seen any upside on this price so far this season. In fact, the max you could get on a $9,900 price tag is the 50 points, so 5x points per dollar, in a great matchup against Philly. He's had some other good matchups too, Phoenix and LA, where he hasn't paid this price. So I think I would play Wall, but I would probably do it somewhat reluctantly. Like, I'd rather not land there for our cash games. I know that's kind of where the system is leaning right now because it sees some cheap value elsewhere, but I would want to look a little bit more carefully and just make sure that, you know, there weren't any other treasures at the end of the rainbow besides just paying up for a John Wall who, you know, whose upside seems to be 5x.
Yeah, point guard is just really not all that inspiring in general tonight. I think that's one of the other issues. A lot of these, a lot of the other point guards are just properly priced, and they all sort of have that same, at least on FanDuel, have that same, you're not grabbing a lot of upside for all their respective prices. I mean, there's a couple other guys we can talk about here. So Wall is far from a lock cash gameplay for me by any means. And it would feel weird on this slate to be like that, where you allocated a lot of your salary for some reason, just because of all the other names and some of the matchups. But I do think 36 or 37 minutes out of him is completely reasonable. I think Beal has some upside as a probably more of a tournament play, just because of how he gets points. Like, he's just very scoring dependent. So if it's on for him, it's completely on. But you do need to get there on the scoring. He's not going to do a ton else across the box score. Gortat also coming pretty cheap, and you can see them playing him minutes because he actually also could cause some matchup problems for them underneath. Other 7 o'clock game, Chicago goes into Orlando. Chicago's been messing around with their starting lineup. Kind of put that in quotes, because messing around, just kind of like taking the scrap heap pile of losers that they have and sort of rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic to see which combination is, not going to get completely blown out every night. But I am interested what you think about their guard play, because guys like Chris Dunn, like, he's coming off the bench. He's had the minutes have went from 22 and now 29 minutes. I mean, there's some chance at some point he starts. Do you think, one, is he cheap enough in like this current landscape of just where we stand with, especially very aggressive FanDuel pricing at 5,300, would you trust Dunn enough to get enough minutes to consider him in cash games or even really any of the other guards?
Yeah, it seems weird because when you watch them play, Dunn seems to be the most competent guard that they have on their team. It doesn't appear to be totally close. Like, he seems to be much better than Jerian Grant. I think he's better than Justin Holiday too. Both of those guys have been playing more minutes than him, but it's going to be hard to continue to antagonize your fan base and leave a guy who, seems to be the most skilled, at least by my estimation, and especially as a distributor of any of those guys. So I do think Dunn will continue to round out into a larger role. Just know that anytime you're going to play a guy who's going to start the game on the bench, you're signing yourself up for occasional games where that guy plays 18 minutes. It just happens to everybody. It doesn't really matter who you are, whether you're Andre Iguodala, pick your favorite sixth man of the year, Lance Stevenson in his heyday. These guys will lose minutes so everyone will lose minutes occasionally, but bench guys are at the highest risk by far to lose minutes for no particular reason at all, because it's a longer time before the TV timeout, or there's all sorts of different random crap that can happen that can get your bench guys sitting there. So while I like Dunn, I like his prospects going forward. I would like him, heaven forbid, if you're playing a season-long NBA league. I think he's the guy you want to bet on in this Bulls lineup. I'm not sure that I want to be the one who tries to figure out if he's going to be playing 29 minutes a game or 22, because those are the two totals he's had so far. And I don't know that we can see, you can't draw a line between 2 points and continue to project, right? And so I think we need more data points before we can confidently say what their plan is with him there.
David Nwaba did get the start last time for Chicago, was competent. He did play upwards of 30 minutes and looked pretty good. He's still coming pretty cheap on both sides. So I think you can possibly slot him in for 4,100 if he was going to get the start again and you thought he was going to play 28, 29 minutes. He's not all that good of a basketball player, but here we're just looking at what kind of minutes distribution we can get on a guy that's cheap on FanDuel, which is becoming increasingly difficult to find. So if he's going to get the start again, and we'll know because it's a 7 o'clock game, I think he's a reasonable punt-ish play if you think the minutes are going to be there again. Orlando side, these are guys that have been playing pretty steady minutes. It looks like Elfrid Payton is going to... So DJ Augustine is out, but it looks like Elfrid Payton is going to play. Payton would be coming back from... He'd be coming back off injury, so it's hard to imagine giving him a ton of minutes to start, which sucks because they are really thin at point guard right now. If Elfrid Payton weren't to play, I mean, would you like a Jonathan Simmons, Shelvin Mack matchup here, or mashup sort of like in the point? I think Simmons would run a lot of backup point guard, and Mack might be in line for a lot of minutes. How do you see some of this Magic stuff possibly shaking out?
Yeah, I mean, Mack played 25 minutes last game, and that was even with Augustine playing part of the game. I want to be careful to point out that was only 13 minutes from Augustine, so redistributing 13 minutes isn't really that many, right? Looking at Simmons 26 minutes, Max 25 minutes, I don't think that there's really that many more to pass around necessarily. This is just the FanDuel of the future that we live in now, unfortunately, where Simmons at 5,200 and Mack at 5,000, neither of those represents particularly great deals either. So it's a decent matchup with Chicago. I think if both Payton and Augustine weren't to play here, then Mack would be a guy who could just be in your rotation, given how thin point guard is. But I don't think I would want to play Simmons necessarily, and I certainly don't want to play Elfrid Payton if he does come back.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think Peyton's going to see enough minutes just to start. Chicago is a very slow team, but also very bad on defense. So Orlando is projected to put up somewhere in like in the 107 points range. I don't mind some of their bigger minutes guys like Gordon and Fournier and even Vucevic because the defense, again, the Chicago defense is bad. But just take into mind, you are getting a possession and pace down matchup here against Chicago. So
that it's dramatic. I don't know. I don't know if the defense warrants like targeting Chicago as an overall team. Like, the 106 defensive efficiency rating is basically middle of the pack this season, and the pace is bottom three. So I don't know that you're really getting away with much. Like Sacramento, for instance, they play just as fast. So Sacramento and Dallas actually are on either side of Chicago here. Both have a worse defensive efficiency rating and play roughly the same speed, and it's been pretty brutal targeting guys against those teams. So I don't know that I would, you know, I would not take this as a net positive by any stretch.
No, I agree. I was eventually going to get there. I was to say I think that the pace down mitigates the problems that they have on defense, or at least like neutralizes it enough. Milwaukee goes into to play the Pistons here in a relatively projected to be a relatively low scoring game, though. Milwaukee does have some interesting pieces here. It looks like, you know, Greg Monroe is still out. John Henson played a ton of minutes last time out, and he was interesting because he's not going to score that much, but he had a ton of just like other stuff. He had 10 rebounds. He'd randomly had 6 assists, block and a steal, and gets there on 29 minutes. Do you trust? I don't. They did start him last game. I suspect they do it again. Do you think he pushes up to 30 minutes as well? And do you think? I'm just like not sure John Henson still, even now, still profiles as like a value play at 5,000 on FanDuel, even if you thought he was going to start and play 30.
Doesn't feel like a value play, but it could be a reasonable play. I think you can probably give him more points, and you can definitely give him fewer assists. I mean, the assists are actually kind of comical. He went four games without a single assist earlier this season, and he wasn't playing very many minutes, but we're talking over the course of, let's see, 32, 44. Yeah, so over the course of 60 minutes of play, he had 0 assists. Like, you can't pencil him in for anything remotely close to that. That being said, he probably is the expectation on him is probably more blocks over that time. So, you know, if you figure you rob Peter to pay Paul there, give him down to 2 assists and 3 blocks or something, it's basically the same performance. I think Henson's reasonable. I think the floor is actually okay, given that so much of his value is locked up in his ability to rebound the ball. And I think that 5,000, again, it's pretty expensive. Like, I would be excited to play him at 3,500. I would be happy to play him at 4,000. I think if I'm going to play him at 5,000, it's just because that's how the money shakes out. But I wouldn't X him out. I think he's, if he's going to start and nothing about the situation has changed, I think he's totally playable.
Giannis still very expensive at 12,000 at small forward. I just think that's even on a big slate. My sense is that that's just too expensive to pay for him. Do you think it's a slower matchup here against Detroit? What do you think about Giannis?
Yeah, I want to be careful to not penalize Giannis too much for the last two performances. I think every indication out of Milwaukee is that they do want to play him that 38 to 40 minutes per game. So two games in a row, I know that it's two games in a row and that becomes scarier, but if you extrapolate those games out to his normal minutes, they were just as good as he's always been. So I think he's a playable option at your spend up slot. I think, you know, people should be careful to not put him at like 35 minutes. I think that's simply too low, even though the last two games he's been worse than that. So still playable. I do think the matchup takes away from it to some degree, but in my mind, Giannis is still one of, if not the safest big money guy for DFS basketball right now.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that ultimately I'm worried of just a little bit about the price, especially sure. Like, so you have Giannis and then you have LeBron, at least on FanDuel, for 1,400 less. It's close. It's close in terms of points per dollar. I think I'd probably take the savings on LeBron with the understanding that I probably just don't get quite as much upside as Giannis. But I think that savings at this point, at least on FanDuel, really does matter. And Giannis is a good deal over on DraftKings as well, who are only coming in 1,100. The rest of the Detroit side, I will say the move to Henson in the starting lineup is interesting from the DFS perspective, but it goes the other way as well. They have really no interior presence when Henson's on the court. We saw two games in a row of the opposing centers just completely dominating the glass. Like, Steven Adams completely crushed them in the first game, and then the last game, Dwight Howard and Cody Zeller combined for like 20 rebounds total out of the center position. Does that make you want to, like, with stats like that, even though it's a short-term sample size, but it kind of makes sense, would it make you interested in Drummond here at all?
Yeah, I think Drummond is another guy that, you know, he's kind of generally underrated, I feel like, for DFS purposes, because the rebounding is so truly elite. And when he really goes off, he can really go off, like with blocks and steals and, you know, putbacks and that kind of thing. We haven't seen him kind of rise into that role just yet, but I think it's, you have to consider it a positive matchup against a team that's basically not running a center right now, you know, and certainly no one on his order of athleticism or strength. So, yeah, I like, or Drummond here, rather. I don't see anyone on the Milwaukee side to be able to punish him, put him into foul trouble. And I think for those reasons, he's, yeah, another guy that can be in your rotations for really any format tonight.
He's expensive is the only issue there too. Like the prices come up off of some
Sure.
decent, like just some overall performances. So, and you know, we're gonna get to, well, actually, I'll just go right into the next game because he's the same price as Embiid. This is the next game, which is Indiana going in and playing Philly. Embiid, it was, you know, the big concern, the only concern from a fantasy perspective on Embiid, really since he came up, has been how many minutes is he gonna play. There's been absolutely no question about the talent. He's, you know, among the best, and he's going to start pushing up to be maybe the best player at some point in the NBA. Or it's going to be interesting with him and Giannis, I think, going forward in terms of just like who you might rather have in the team, just kind of, for what they bring to the team. Like his net rating for when he's on the court is so insane. Like it's like plus 52 or something like that, and it's probably even higher. Like he's just like one of the best plus minuses
Oh yeah, he's
that
been
you'll
passing
see.
out of double teams now too. Like he's six assists, which is the high on the season last game, and that looks like somewhat legit to me too. He just seems really smart. Obviously, super athletic. Teammates love him. Yeah, I'm a huge Embiid fan. I love the guy.
Well, so the big thing was last game, for the first time in his career, he played 30 minutes. And he'd really always hovered in the 25 to 28-ish range as they just tried to manage his reps. But if they're starting to scale up the minutes, I mean, are we comfortable putting him at 30 minutes? And two, at 30 minutes at 9,300 on FanDuel, is he playable at these prices?
So no, I'm not comfortable putting him at 30 minutes, and I think on the projected minutes that you can give him, he's not a $9,300 player. So I'm not going to play Embiid tonight. I love Embiid. He might be my favorite player right now. I'm definitely not going to play him tonight.
He's only 8,300 on DraftKings, and I think that is probably ends up being a pretty chalky play. I think you can stomach that at even like 28 to 29 minutes and hope that he's not going to completely kill you at that price. So 8,300 on DraftKings, probably if you're looking for some Embiid ownership, I think that's probably the way to go. Other guys on the Philly side, you know, Simmons has been pretty amazing so far. They're getting healthier, so they got Redick back. Anything else on the Philly side, and then we can talk about Indiana.
Yeah, I think Simmons is a guy that you can consider a little bit more seriously than Embiid here. He's been playing more minutes. He's been excellent. I mean, he contributes across the board. He really is like a little mini Giannis in a lot of ways. In the fact that he runs the point, distributes incredibly well, great rebounder, great scorer. So I think you can consider Simmons. You're paying a lot for him, but if I had to choose one Philly guy at this price range on FanDuel, I would absolutely choose Simmons here. I think Covington remains kind of like a fairly steady option. You know, our system was pulling him up in his last game, goes out there, basically just continues this 5x points per dollar train that he's been on, you know, in this price range for multiple seasons. Like, this is kind of the guy he is. And so, in good matchups, you'll wind up wanting to play him. In bad matchups, you can sit him, but kind of fairly priced. And in this contest, I think it's a reasonable play. I mean, Indiana's playing much faster than they did last season, tied for 10th in the league right now, with a 102.8 pace. So, you know, pace up matchup overall. And I think all the Philly guys, for that reason, the ones that are reasonably priced anyway, are kind of in consideration here.
We're getting another. Miles Turner has not completely cleared a concussion protocol, I don't believe yet. So he's going to sit out one more game, which means we're going to at least get one more game of Sabonis starting at the five. He's listed as a power forward on FanDuel. We have him as one of the highest points per dollar. I mean, really, and once I lower Trevor Booker a little bit, Sabonis is going to be the highest points per dollar play that we have on FanDuel at power forward. Do you think he is he like, do you think he's going to be a pretty chalky play? He's only 5,600 at a position that's sometimes hard to fill.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've been kind of believers in Sabonis ever since kind of the early machinations we were seeing there moving around in Indiana. It really looked like he was the guy that they wanted to slot into that big role. He's another guy. He's not like Embiid in a lot of ways, but he's also passing out of double teams down there. He's just gobbling up rebounds, double-digit rebounds in each of the last six games. So I think he's a pretty safe bet for a double-double, somewhat of a featured part of the offense. So yeah, Sabonis is great. I think it's a very, very affordable price, and another guy that could just be a chalk play tonight.
He's been probably running hot on field goal percentage, though. He's just taking a totally different brand of shots than he was with OKC, so it's not a one-to-one comp on what he had done in the past to what he's doing now. And then when Turner comes back, you'll probably see the end of the value on him. But I do think you see him as a pretty popular play here tonight. 7:30 game, Houston goes in as an 8.5 favorite over Atlanta. We saw they blew out the Knicks last time around, where they kind of played Harden a few more minutes in the blowout than I thought they were going to, and he still kind of didn't get there on his price. Are we basically just off of just paying $11,000 at this point for Harden? We've talked about this briefly in the past. Has anything changed in our opinions about whether or not this is the right price or just too expensive for Harden?
Well, I've kept track, and I've said it every single time, every single game so far this season, someone has wanted to play Harden, and I have not wanted to play him. I think I wound up playing him once maybe over the course of the season when I've been playing, and I've been right every time on this price pretty much. I mean, you know, he's had a couple you would call them good games, I guess. But again, if you averaged his performance in those games on this price, you'd be scoring less than 300 points. And so I want to know, what contest is it good to score less than 300 points? Because, and not to say that you always need 5x points per dollar on your big money guys. Like, sometimes you can tolerate, like his, you could certainly tolerate his 54 per point or a point performance against Philly, and you'd be pretty well off there. But that's his best game on the season, and that is just not what we're used to seeing out of Harden in particular, but out of $11,000 players in general. So no, I'm not playing Harden, and I will be happy whatever his ownership percentage is tonight. I'll be happy to see it.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be as high tonight as it was the other night, which still was confusing to me because I'm just not completely seeing it. He's not getting to the line enough. The turnovers have been slightly an issue, and then if the three ball is not completely falling for the team, then his assist numbers are going to go down as well. So I think I'm with you. I think he's just too expensive. Atlanta side, they do get something of an okay matchup here. Terry and Prince has been playing a lot of minutes. I'm not sure that's really where I want to go. Anything about Atlanta side interests you at all?
I think Prince is actually pretty reasonable. You know, the minutes have been there and he's been good, and I like that combination. You know, sometimes guys are getting minutes, but it's kind of a hollow minutes, like a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Courtney Lee types, you know, who can be out there not doing a whole lot. Prince isn't totally fitting that bill for me right now, especially given how he's contributing on the glass. 11-5 and 7 rebounds in his last three games. It's kind of more than we had come to expect from him in the past, and, you know, that a lot of rebounding comes down to positioning, and if that's how the Hawks are using him right now, I think that he's a pretty effective play. I think other Hawks, you know, the big situation is kind of dicey for me. Muscala actually has seen some run, but like a lot of bench guys, it's kind of comes and goes. Sometimes it's 31 minutes, sometimes it's 20. After that, Schroeder's very expensive now for kind of what he brings to the table on average. I think early in the season, there was some value there. I think right now it's just a little bit in the pricey range. And actually, I want to take one opportunity just to gloat is too strong a word, but another way to evaluate the projection system that you're using and how we evaluate our system is take a night like the other night when we played and we came down to this really close decision at small forwards, right? Like the small forwards in consideration were TJ Warren, Covington, Bojan,
Barnes,
the guys we played who were bad. Yeah, Barnes and Kelly Oubre, right? So some of those were punt plays, you know, whatever. Sometimes it's hard to evaluate. But I think a really good thing to keep an eye on is how well is the projection system that you're using, if you're using ours or making your own or using some other sites, how well is it predicting price movement, right? Because by playing a guy or putting them high in lineups, it's kind of making a bet on price movement. So a guy like Harden, who hasn't been in our lineups basically all season, that's our system saying this guy's price will come down, and it has. A guy like TJ Warren, who was showing up, that's our system saying this guy's price is going to go up, and it has. And so, yeah, wins and losses are very important, obviously, but if you're only playing the top overall lineup amid, you know, five lineups that are separated by 0.5 points, it's going to be hard to get as clear a picture as to how your projection system is performing. And I think one thing our system has been excellent at all season, from Oladipo to the Wizards guys and beyond, is knowing where the value is, as evidenced by how the price has moved after the fact. So I feel very, very good about that so far this season, and I have no reason to believe that it won't continue to be excellent at predicting price movement going forward.
I'm totally with you. We've been very happy with the returns on what's happened so far this season. Suns go in to play the Knicks, kind of a dream matchup here, for at least from the Knicks side of the ball, facing a Suns team that is basically, I believe they're playing the second fastest pace in the league and one of the worst defensive efficiencies. So it's just another year of Suns basketball. Do you think at least Kristaps is chalk? And then we can talk about some of the other guys.
I think he's going to be a heavily played player tonight for sure. I think it's fine. Right now he's dealing with a little illness thing. Like he missed Thursday's practice and is questionable tonight. So we'll see if he plays or not. But I think if he does, he's the type of guy. Like again, if you compare your big money plays, compare him to Wall and what he's been doing on similar minutes, and it's sort of a no contest when the Knicks get a matchup where they're not going to get blown out. So I do really like him. And then also speaking of predicting price movement, how about your boy Tim Hardaway up $2,000 in the last three games, and has been excellent. You know, just, and I'll give you total credit for this, just like you've been tuning that horn, and you know, we got three really good games out of him on the prices where he was at. Are you liking him here though, now that he's up to 6,000 against a very fast and bad defensive team in Phoenix?
I like the matchup, but this is a good matchup for him because he's a volume shooter, or he needs volume shots to be able to hit value, right? He's like he's the poor man's Bradley Beal in this way, right? Like these shooting guards that just need to be able to shoot because they're just not going to do a ton of other stuff. And this is why you're going to probably see price fluctuations on him as well, because, or why you're going to have frustrating performances out of him, because when the shot's not falling, you're completely dead on him, right? Like
I don't know about that. Look at the last three games out of him. I mean, multiple steals in each of those games, 4 assists, 3 assists, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, 4-4. Like, I don't think he's quite... in that category of those scoring-only guys right now. When he's active and when he's engaged, I think it's more for him like a... You know, if it's going bad for him, it goes real bad. So there's still variance, but I think he can contribute across multiple categories.
I guess you're right. It was maybe those first three games where he wasn't doing anything else. And he just has like a history of just not doing a ton as well. But this is just the right kind of matchup. It's close for me. 6,000 is a lot for him, even with the fantastic matchup. And the price has come up, I'm sure, because they're playing Phoenix. That's one I'll evaluate right now. If I had a gun to my head, I probably wouldn't do it. But I could understand why people would. Well, another interesting guy that I've wrestled with these kind of decisions. It's a guy like Enes Kanter, right? The Kanter is, you can see him play 30 minutes. He's going to start. You can see him play up to 30 minutes. You can see him play as few as 17 minutes in certain games. Now, his biggest problem is he's a defensive liability, which is a complete understatement. He's like the worst, maybe the worst defender in the entire league, and this is why he can't stay on in games. Now, that's not as big of a problem against Phoenix, and Phoenix has a big man presence in guys like Chandler and Len. Where do you stand on, wait, what is a reasonable amount of minutes on Kanter? I feel like I am at 26, 27 right now, and I feel like that's probably high.
Yeah, that's probably high. I think if you're trying to hit the sweet spot, I think it's probably more like 24 minutes, 17 and 23 in each of his last two games. Now, he can exceed that. I think it's important if you're modeling for a big tournament, say, and you want to stack this game, Kanter is definitely a guy you can consider. I think he might wind up getting more minutes if Porzingis misses the game, of course. Even though they do different things, I think it's just, you know, the Knicks will need tall men to stand on the court, and he's one of those guys. So I think, you know, keep an eye on that news for sure. Porzingis being out also just clears up a lot of rebounding and points for people to score. So, I think that definitely weighs into it. He's just expensive, man. $5,800 for a guy that can sometimes play 17 minutes. I think I'll just pass there.
Yep, I think I'm with you. Moving into the Phoenix side of the ball, you know, we saw the huge game out of TJ Warren. I always get a little spooked about just where Phoenix ultimately lands. Like it's one of those things, like, right, when TJ Warren is playing well, like, there was no possible way, without it being just the most completely obvious thing ever, that you could take TJ Warren out of that game in a close game against Washington, unless you just have a sign above your thing that says tanking and we're trying to lose. Like, so he played 35 minutes. He simply couldn't miss from the field. The price is up to $6,200 though. Do you think people will look at that last game and want to project him that being the normal, and then feel okay paying $6,200 because it feels expensive to me?
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair assessment. I think, you know, if the minutes are there, then he can pay this. I mean, he's been a value on this price. Obviously, if you take an average, just do the insane performance against Washington. But even if you ignore that and just take the three games prior, even with the really slow matchup in Utah mixed in, he was still a value on this price. So I think he's totally playable, somewhat gun-shy, but I think this is a spot where you can do it. I think if it were a worse matchup, I wouldn't want to do it. But if he landed in my lineup side, I wouldn't click him out.
I think you can still consider guys like Mike James, Devin Booker is not a bad match. Even
though, I like Booker. Yeah.
The James price has come up a little bit, but they seem pretty intent on playing him 28, 29 minutes, which is probably enough at 5,000 against a weaker team in the Knicks, at least on the defensive end. And then Booker as well. 8:30 game. Charlotte goes in to play the Spurs. Spurs coming off the getting blown out last night by the Warriors, which was, you know, somewhat predictable. Anything to see here in this matchup? It's kind of a slow game. The implied total is really low at 190.
Yeah, I don't think so. I you know, there's uncertainty with both of these teams here. To your point about the slow pace, the low total, huge slate, I just don't know why you need to bother.
Aldridge is kind of is coming pretty cheap at only 8,100 at a power, again, the power forward position is is relatively thin. Well, it's very top heavy, and then there's very little in terms of like mid range value, right? Like you have the top heaviness in like guys like Davis and Porzingis, Simmons, and then who are all 9,000 or way more, and then you get, you know, a smattering of guys in like the LaMarcus Aldridge, Aaron Gordon range, but that's why guys like Aldridge kind of like do jump up a little bit. If you their value is a little higher, I think, just because this is a harder position to fill out. All that being said, I mean, they started Patty Mills last night. I don't know why, and then it didn't really work out. Even if he were to start again, I'm not sure I'd be so trusting into that Spurs situation. So I think this game for me is generally a skip. New Orleans goes in and plays Dallas. New Orleans, you know, it's a slow team. Dallas is still playing pretty slow, bad defense. But at this point, you're getting are you getting enough minutes out of and production out of the Cousins, Davis and Holiday camp that their prices are still in play, just because you know that this is so much of the production for the team is just going to come down to those three guys, and specifically the two big guys?
Yeah, I think each is sort of playable on, you know, just on the basis of their floor. And I think actually Boogie, you know, our model's having a tough time figuring out what to make of the reality of him going forward, because he kind of came in a little bit more passively when he first joined the team, and now he's just kind of like just bull in a china shop right now. 74 fantasy points against Mini, 43 not so great, but then 66 and 80 against Sacramento. I think he's still definitely a guy you want to keep your eye on. I just wonder, again, on a big slate, is it worth pricing playing guys? Because I think you would probably agree that they're basically fairly priced, right? Like, it's not like you're getting away with anything playing them at those prices. It's more like they're just good filler to fill in that price point, which I agree, in sort of a neutral or league average matchup. I just think Dallas represents, you know, again, they're in that really clustered bottom five paced group this year. They're the worst defensively among that group. So, you know, they've been playing very, very badly on defense. But I just wonder if the slow pace, the fewer possessions that are going to be passed around kind of matter enough to where we would want to stay off it.
Yeah, they're probably just a little expensive for the matchup. I was watching that game against Minnesota there, and Davis just looked tired. It was weird to watch him because he was there was two possessions in a row where he just stood in the corner with his hands on his knees, which is usually I'm not big on body language. I don't really pay
attention. Poor guy. Did he play 43 freaking minutes in this game? You're going to penalize him for seeming tired?
Well, he just I'm not penalizing him.
What's up with that guy? Did he get him sleep last night?
He completely disappeared down the stretch of the game is more what I mean. But at the same time, it was encouraging to see that Boogie was able to kind of pick up the slack. Now, I know they lost, but I think you are going to see that continued movement of not splitting, but sort of just going with whoever either A has the better matchup. I think they weren't necessarily deferring like that early on with Boogie. I think it was kind of like as they were feeling their way out. Yeah, I think they are probably trying to figure out like who's getting the better of the matchup. Like in that matchup, Davis was drawing Towns and then Boogie was drawing Taj Gibson, and it's pretty obvious what you want to do at that point, right? Like you need to keep feeding Boogie in the much better matchup. So I think that their fantasy performance more than in the past will come down to what kind of matchups they're drawing on a given night. Dallas doesn't have a lot that they can throw at either of these guys. I mean, like Nerlens Noel, I guess you'll see some of, but I think it stands to reason one of these guys has a big game, and it's becoming increasingly difficult on a night-to-night basis figuring out who. Dallas side, some of these guys are coming kind of cheap for guys who could see minutes, though I'm not sure they're playing enough, like Dennis Smith, Yogi Ferrell. I mean, even JJ Barea is coming off the bench and playing a little bit. Anything on the Dallas side interests you here?
Well, our system is going to want to keep looking at Harrison Barnes in price ranges like this and fast matchups. I don't want to keep looking at Harrison Barnes personally. I think that the Dallas offense is kind of, you know, they're kind of anemic enough that I'm just not super interested in it. You know, their pace is, not only is their pace slow, but they're very, very bad on offense. They're bad on offense and defense. Dallas, quietly, just one of the very worst teams in all of basketball right now. So, I think taken all together, I would just as soon not play Dallas on a big slate like this.
Yeah, I think I'm with you too. And I think now that I'm looking at it, I'm probably a little high on some of these guys' minutes because they've been rounding out some of the rotations they're a team that's probably also trying to quietly tank as well. So I think you see some of the minutes come down. Last year, it wasn't the case. They had a very thin team. They were sort of like making a little bit of noise, and then they were just willing to play guys like Barnes and Matthews a ton of minutes. They've gotten a little, at least adding Dennis Smith, has that made them a little deeper in the backcourt, and the rotations aren't quite as robust as we saw from last year, because Barnes played a ton of minutes last year, and I don't think that just doesn't look like it's going to be the case going forward for whatever their plan is, which again I think is to just probably try to lose going forward, which is probably smart. Toronto goes into play Utah. You know, we saw them without Joe Johnson last game, and guys like, you know, Donovan Mitchell came in off the bench and played 35 minutes. I thought we would maybe see some more minutes and usage out of a guy like Rodney Hood, but that really is not working out. Hood went 0-for-11 from the field, 0-0 in 20 minutes. I'm still on the Rodney Hood is can be a viable fantasy commodity if things are going correctly, and I think that he just struggled so much that it just seems like something. It's just probably bad luck in small sample size, but I don't know if
he could just be right. The Tim Hardaway at the moment is a very reasonable way to look at him, I think. I don't think this is the day where you need to figure that out, because again, huge slate going up against Toronto. One of the top defensive teams in the league and just kind of a league average pace this year. So I don't think you need to. This isn't the night you need to make the stand on playing Hood, I guess is my broader point. But a guy to keep an eye on.
A guy like Donovan Mitchell? He played 34 minutes off the bench. Was really good last game. Now the game was like, I don't know if it was a blowout or not, but I take it back. Jazz won in overtime. So maybe give him more like 29 real minutes, because if he was playing through the overtime. Do we want to be bullish on his performance off the bench, or is just still kind of fits that like bench guy, a little bit too risky to play these kind of guys in any kind of safe fashion?
Yeah, I'm not playing Mitchell. I'm not going to play a bench guy outside. I mean, there are guys that develop enough of a track record to where you can think about it on slates like this. Like, I'm trying to think, like Will Barton in the past kind of fit this mold, right? Where he would come off the bench and very reliably be running the second unit, play 30 to 35 minutes a game, even off the bench. Donovan Mitchell has one game of that kind of performance. Now he's cheap. You know, you're not paying very much for him, but for a guy to play 34 minutes, one game, 17, 27, 12, 29, 21, like, I don't know. I don't know what the point is of playing a backup tonight when I can probably get a starter at the same price and just get the more consistent production.
Just a note just came through as we were recording that Elfrid Payton was ruled out for tonight, so we'll probably end up boosting, I would say, Shelvin Mack up to a pretty reasonable amount of minutes, I think. Just going back to something we had talked about earlier in the show, so that could open up some value at point guard, but like we said before with Mack, it wasn't like he was coming all that cheap. Miami goes into Denver. Denver's -5.5 favorites. They've been playing pretty deep rotations here. It's been tough to get a feel for like what they want to do at point guard. Hassan Whiteside came back from a last game for Miami, though didn't play a ton of minutes as he started to work his way back into the offense. Anything you like in this game?
Not especially. I think, you know, again, we have another case of a slow team being involved. And, you know, I hope it's not boring for the people listening at home, but sometimes when you're or in the road or wherever you might be listening, but sometimes when you're playing DFS, it actually, you make a lot of money by skipping over certain games, and this might just be another one of them. I think there are some reasonable plays on the Miami side of the ball if you have a stomach for it, like Deion Waiters. You know, the fact that he put up 49 points against Minnesota leads me to believe that he has the type of upside you might be interested in on a price point like that. But I guess I'm mostly talking about the Denver side, where the guys seem relatively fairly priced, and they're getting both a slow matchup and a bad defensive matchup with Miami. So I don't, like, for that reason, I'm just not really keying in on any Denver guys here.
I don't mind Dragic's price on FanDuel at 6,800. Seems like pretty fairly priced and in the right kind of matchup. I think that, you know, the Denver doesn't have much in the way of defending point guard, so I think Dragic is an okay spot here. It's probably a borderline cash game play for me on FanDuel, and I suspect the price just like doesn't completely work out. But I don't mind him sort of in that middle tier in a decent matchup here. Let's finish it off. Oh no, two more games. Boston goes into OKC. OKC, they've looked really good this year. It looks like those signings are probably going to, at least in some fashion, work out if everyone can stay healthy. And the starting five at least looks they're just fun to watch, honestly. just the way that it's so much fun. It's much more fun to watch Westbrook play with like actual real basketball players that can like take shots on their own and make shots and kind of know what they're doing on the defensive end all around. They're -6.5 favorites here. Is Westbrook a guy? Is a team deep enough now where it's harder to play Westbrook? He's only 10-6 on FanDuel. He's the same price as he's less than Harden, right? Like, which to me seems kind of nuts. What are your thoughts here on the OKC side?
I'd rather play Westbrook than Harden without question. I just don't know if either is a very good play. Boston this season, they've just totally changed their profile over the last few years, and it's been kind of insane. So right now they lead the league in defensive efficiency, which is pretty nuts, especially given some of the injuries they've been facing, and especially given that they brought Kyrie Irving in. But I guess right. Isaiah Thomas, replacing him, maybe everything was a step in the right direction. So they lead the league in defensive efficiency, and they're fifth in the league in terms of slowest pace. So they're really a terrible matchup by basically every metric. Outside of like kind of the anecdotal metric of, well, could Westbrook just kill Kyrie? And the answer to that is always yes on any given basis. But the rest of the guys, I for that reason alone, just the raw number of possessions and the quality of those possessions, given Boston's excellent defense, I think kind of keeps me off them. And likewise, Oklahoma City, a lot has been made about the offensive punch that George and Anthony and those guys would bring, but they're second in the NBA this year in defensive efficiency. So both Boston and Oklahoma City ranking 1-2, and Oklahoma City basically playing a slightly below league average pace. So, this is a game, on its surface, there's a lot of big names, there's a lot of good scorers, but this actually might be a quiet skip where some people get sucked in based on kind of how these teams have played in the past or, the reputation of some of the players involved. But this discretion might be the better part of valor here. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, that's a great point about I didn't realize that Boston's defensive efficiency was so good. I mean, it's really a testament to how good of a coach Stevens is, because he just takes the pieces that he has and just makes them work for whatever it is. So that's, if it's slowing the pace down and getting Kyrie more into half court sets, and just not going run and gun, then that's going to be their path. Like he's just like the best coach, is like figuring out what he has and then just kind of playing that hand rather than playing the hand that he wants to play. It's really just pretty impressive. Really interesting point about OKC. It'd be a fun game probably to watch, and maybe everyone's just not quite the right price. Last game, oh man, it's like the universe is collapsing on
itself.
You get
a fun to watch.
Well, I think actually these kind of games can be fun to watch, not from like a pure basketball nerdy perspective, but just more.
Oh, I was being serious. It's the highest total on the night. Like, this is Vegas thinks you're going to see some fireworks.
We get Brooklyn. I laugh every time these teams play. I'm going to sound like a broken record here for the rest of the season, but Brooklyn faces the Lakers. Brooklyn. All right, well, it's the highest total game on the slate, and it's definitely, I think it pits the fastest two teams or two of the three fastest teams or something like that. Brooklyn is the fastest team at 108, and Lakers are fourth at 104. Let's start with Brooklyn side. Even in a fast-paced matchup, can we trust the minutes at all from any of their players? Let me stop for 1 second. So the other day, they are playing the Suns, and they are without Quincy Acey and Jared Allen, and I make what I feel at the time is a reasonable decision to just bump up the two or three big guys left, which is Mozgov, Trevor Booker, and then to some degree Tyler Zeller, thinking there's no way that they can run more than like 6 or 7 minutes of Ronnie Hollis Jefferson at the five and like have any reasonable chance to win, especially with guys like Chandler and Len on the court. And then Booker and Mozgov play like their least amount of minutes of the year, and the team gets out rebounded by like 25 points. If situations like this aren't going to play out like in a reasonable way, is there like any way that you can ever project what the Nets' plan is on a night-to-night basis? Like, does that make sense? I'm giving the scenario to ask to inform a greater, broader decision about should we ever be bullish on any Nets guys ever?
I think there is a guy to be bullish on here, and that's Damari Carroll. Carroll this season, he has one bad game against New York, but other than that, he's been great on this price. I mean, like, just 6x, like clockwork. He's like the one grown up on the team, as best I can tell, like just trying his best and like seems to want to win the games. And I think they leave him out there because, he at least gets them not embarrassed on the defensive end. The steals are still totally elite for him. He can block a shot or two as well. He's, he's kind of a middling contributor across the other categories, but really what I like about him is, the 27 to 31 minute rotation. And I think, he's still cheap enough. I think he is an enabler at other positions. And I think the matchup is good enough here with the Lakers that you can consider it. But outside of him, unfortunately, it's just, the tragedy of the commons problem. There's too many minutes. There's not enough minutes in the game for my friends, the Nets, to get their value. So he's really the only guy for me.
Larry Nance did break his finger, I believe, last night. I mean, he's definitely out going forward. I just don't know what the exact injury was. Kyle Kuzma looked pretty good. He played 29 minutes last night, as he seems to be taking probably more of the minutes away from Julius Randle. If Kuzma were to start and you thought he was going to play something along the lines of Nance's minutes, maybe like high 20s minutes, now that they're without a big man, how do you see some of this front court stuff shaking out for the Lakers, who are in a great spot with points and they're just another team tough to get a handle on when it comes to actual fantasy production?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that if you can get Kuzma as a starter, he's kind of actually kind of the ideal punt in some ways, because he's been a value even off the bench, even with fewer minutes to spread around. And I think if you loosen up some minutes from Nance, now who knows, the Lakers, again, with their dedication to losing on purpose, they might just spread those into guys whose names we've never even heard, that we don't even know are on the team or whatever. But, they just go deeper on like Ivica Zubac or, you know, Thomas Bryant. Who knows where the minutes wind up going. But no, I think that if Kuzma's starting, I'd be very enthusiastic about playing him. I think after that, though, it gets pretty dicey. Basically, at every other position, you know, they just do whatever the heck they want on any given night. And Lonzo Ball has flashed upside, but he's also flashed the ability to score 0 points in an NBA basketball game. So that's not always what you want on your $7,500 price tag. So I think, unfortunately, outside of Kuzma or just whoever gets that starting power forward role, you're basically looking at a guy like maybe Brandon Ingram or nothing at all.
Yeah, it should be a fun game to watch. Not if you enjoy good basketball, but if you like to see guys sprinting up and down the court at full speed, this is the game for you. All right, I think we've made it through the undetermined amount of games that we discussed here on this slate. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, if you want to get started with a free 3-day trial, and then just $29.95 a month after. Buddy, enjoy a full Friday night of basketball, and I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, buddy. Peace.